Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me for another really important and powerful conversation. As you know, this program is really dedicated to empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. And this show is one of those really important shows that I'm so glad you are listening to, because it will profoundly awaken you to an issue that is affecting so many people and children around the world. So I'm just going to jump right into our show today. We're going to be talking about the new documentary that has just been released in February called Trace Amounts, Autism, Mercury, and the Hidden Truth, with the film producers, creators, writers Eric Gladden and Shiloh Levine. During the past 20 years, the frequency of autism occurring in children has skyrocketed from 1 in 10,000 to 1 in 68. And the scientific community is no closer to determining a cause. Trace Amounts is the true story of Eric Gladden's painful journey through mercury poisoning that he believes resulted from a thimerosal-loaded tetanus shot. His discoveries led him on a quest for the scientific truth about the role of mercury poisoning in the autism epidemic. And Eric, who is with us today, majored in engineering at Oregon State University, and through a tragic life experience in 2004, his life was changed forever, and his focus was on storytelling through the documentary film genre. And Shiloh Levine studied film production and theory at the University of Colorado at Boulder. Her earlier works are mainly experimental and documentary shorts. In between films, a film job, Shiloh began teaching children with autism. She has also produced, written, and anchored for OTV and is currently focused on projects that inspire positive change. And Shiloh was one of the directors and creators of this documentary. So we're really fortunate today to have Eric and Shiloh with us on the show. So let me welcome you both, Eric and Shiloh. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
So I just have to congratulate you wholeheartedly. It's a very heartfelt thank you, because I was so moved when I watched this documentary. I had so many emotions come up, everything from profound sadness to grief to anger, rage. It really touched a gamut of emotions, which I'm sure is what you intended to achieve, because it's a very emotive story.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, so I'm going to start, Eric, with you, because you, this, so much of this documentary is about your story, and it's woven into the bigger theme of the real issues that have been driving this autism epidemic that have not been honestly nor truthfully addressed. So let's talk about your experience and how an engineer kind of turned into a documentary filmmaker.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's a kind of a long story that I'll kind of keep it short. By coincidence, I used to manage the design and construction of pharmaceutical manufacturing buildings. And in 2004, when I was 29, while I was building manufacturing facilities, I was just happened to be building my fence in my backyard one weekend and scratched the top of my head with a rusty nail from a nail that was sticking out of a neighbor's adjoining fence. And I hadn't had a tetanus shot in over 10 years, so I went down to the local urgent care and within, 15 minutes got a tetanus shot and was on my way back to build my fence. And ended up getting extremely sick from the tetanus shot and had all the crazy neurological and psychological symptoms kick in over a period of about 3 months. They started right away, very slowly developed into to severe neurological symptoms for the most part. And, doctors were looking at every neurological condition in the book and really trying to rule out everything while they're doing all the testing and stuff. And ultimately it came down to I got sick from the thimerosal, which is a mercury-based preservative that was in that tetanus shot. And once I went through a process of taking medications that bind to mercury and remove it from the body and brain, all my symptoms went away. And that kind of stemmed the initial research, I would say. And then once I started hearing it on the news, you know, a short time later, I started hearing them talk about thimerosal and autism and is there a potential link between the two? I really started to perk up to, you know, what is this autism thing all about? Probably within 5 minutes of researching autism, I just couldn't stop researching. And that's kind of what led to the start of the film.
You know, based on the story that you tell in your documentary in Trace Amounts, I mean, that period, that time when you were suffering from mercury toxicity was a really debilitating time. How long were you actually dealing with the consequences from that exposure to thimerosal?
Yeah, from the tetanus shot, you know, I got the shot on January 18, 2004. Symptoms kicked in right away. So within a couple of days, I already had some symptoms kick in, flu-like symptoms or nervousness, shakiness, dizziness, that type of stuff would kick in periodically. But towards the end of February is when the severe disturbing, some of the severe symptoms kicked in, like sensitivity to noise. It was like somebody turned up the volume in my ears. Sensory disturbances, visual. I had a lot of tracers and muscles in my eyes hurt. Then it kicked into tics and muscle twitching and tremors. And it was probably about 3 months to the day I got the shot where I went in with severe neurological symptoms to emergency and started seeing every doctor in the book. And it took probably another month to figure out what the problem was. And by, you know, probably 4 months after the tetanus shot is when I started treatment. And for the first 3 months, you just kind of take the drugs that get it out of your extracellular compartments and your blood. And then within, you know, 3 months of taking the alpha-folic acid that pulls it out of the brain, all my symptoms were gone. So it was probably about 4 months of really, you know, troubling symptoms and trial and error of trying to figure out what happened, and then a period of about 3 to 6 months to get all the symptoms to go away through the treatments. So it was a long process.
And, I mean, it was, you know, such a debilitating time for you because, as you were saying, you couldn't sleep, you were anxious, you had tics, and you know, as I was watching the documentary and you were explaining your story, your experience, it's like you're kind of the Rosetta Stone to me of somebody who, as an adult, went through this extreme mercury toxicity experience and had experienced all of the symptoms that children with autism have, everything from the tics to the, you know, highly sensitive auditory sensations to the brain just getting really focused, insomnia, gut issues. But these kids have never been able to communicate what's going on, what their inner experience is that is causing the behaviors, you know, from hitting their heads against the wall to just being in constant pain. And for me, hearing your experience and then being able to explain it and decipher it and understand what these kids are going through was a really profound part of your story.
Have people
said that to you?
Yeah, people definitely who have a child with autism and have a lot of that, they see a lot of the symptomology that's similar. You know, I did have a lot of symptoms that were very similar in nature to autism. Of course, I didn't have autism. I think children who are severely affected by mercury, when their brain is developing, is going to be a lot different than somebody who's an adult and already has a fully functioning brain, fully developed brain, and then gets poisoned. So there was a lot of similarities in symptomology, but I didn't have autism. I had mercury poisoning, which is our theory that these children with autism actually have mercury poisoning. So that is what really stemmed my research, knowing what I went through and understanding better of what autism was, because I always thought it was just Rain Man. And once I really looked at the true symptoms, you know, it's much more just than just psychological symptoms these children with autism have. It goes deep into physical symptoms as well. And once I started understanding what these kids were going through and what I knew I just had gone through, that really drove my research to try to get to the bottom of this potential link between thimerosal and autism.
So it's like this, event, this random event, seemingly random event that occurred to you that made you get a tetanus shot, really guided you to a life's purpose, at least up until now? I mean, it's quite a profound project that you have created. And I mean, to put a documentary film together, not just the research on mercury and autism, but to create a documentary film is an immense commitment.
Yeah, it took a long time. It definitely sidetracked me from where my life was. Let's put it that way. Ended up pushing my career to make the film, and it's been a 10-year process.
So let's bring Shiloh in. So Shiloh, how is it ironic that you were teaching autistic children? You should be involved in this project as well.
Sure. I mean, well, you know, it was when I started teaching children with autism that I started to get clued in to the mercury relationship. And I was always reading health books, and I had come across the relationship, but more so with amalgams than with the vaccines. The vaccines weren't part of that literature. And what I started to do was actually to get my amalgams removed. And when I met Eric, was right around that time, and so it just made a lot of sense for me to, already being in filmmaking and in documentary film in particular, to take on this project with Eric. And it's almost like my two worlds collided.
Mm. Yes, I would see that. And, you know, obviously you're a really powerful team to bring this into being. And Eric, so let me, with all your research, let me ask you this question. Why is mercury so dangerous? And let's start with that. Why is mercury so dangerous?
I mean, mercury is one of the most neurotoxic elements on the planet. In fact, it's been called number two underneath plutonium. So this is a substance that is far more dangerous than lead. In fact, there's no comparison between the toxicity of lead and mercury. And with scientists that we've dealt with who have done studies on cells or neurons with lead and aluminum and mercury, you know, mercury is anywhere between 1,500 to 10,000 times more toxic than lead. So this is an element that is incredibly dangerous. It targets almost every sense in your body. It really targets your senses. It targets your immune system, your endocrine system, your central nervous system. It goes into the brain and disrupts pretty much every type of function. It'll completely clog up your detox mechanisms and also inhibit your methylation processes. I mean, this is like the master neurotoxin that really gets inside your body without you really knowing it. And there's also a big delay in symptoms. This is a huge piece of this puzzle. When you get a single exposure to mercury, you might slowly have little symptoms develop, but it's 3 to 6 months before all the neurological symptoms kick in. So, you know, imagine if children, a lot of these children, they don't become autistic a week after their shots or 2 weeks after their shots. It's usually within within 3 months. It's 3 months later that they've slipped into their own little world. And that's a big piece of this puzzle, because if every child who has autism got their shots and tomorrow they have autism, which is typically not even close to the case. I mean, I'm sure there are some cases, but this would have been resolved a long time ago if this delay in the onset of symptoms didn't happen. And that's what happened with me and my tetanus shot. And imagine how many other people are cleaning up a fluorescent light bulb in their kitchen and 3 months later develop major neurological symptoms. How hard how easy would it be to backtrack to that bulb in your kitchen? You're never going to figure that out. So that's why I call it the master neurotoxin. Not only does it kind of creep up on you so you'll never figure out what the exposure was that caused it, but also it'll target the exact things in your body that you need to protect yourself from future exposure. So it'll actually by itself lower glutathione level. Glutathione is the key in your body to be able to excrete mercury. So when you get an exposure to mercury, it suppresses glutathione levels and it also increases your testosterone levels, which makes it more synergistic and more dangerous. Testosterone and mercury have a very synergistic effect, and testosterone actually protects you from mercury. So when you get this exposure, it decreases your ability to excrete mercury upon future exposures and increases your testosterone to make it much more synergistic. I mean, it is incredibly dangerous, but nobody understands.
Eric meant estrogen protects you, not testosterone.
Yeah, estrogen protects you from the effects of mercury, right?
Which is why, as you were saying, mercury binds with testosterone, which is why males are more susceptible to autism because of that testosterone level. And we're talking about infants.
Absolutely. That's a big piece of this puzzle as well. Why are there four to five boys to every girl with autism? Well, you look at the science, even thimerosal, a study done just with thimerosal on animals, killed 7 of the male mice before even the first female mouse died. So it has an incredibly much more toxic effect on males than females. And that's just one big piece of the puzzle. I'm telling you, mercury explains every single factor. Why autism started in 1931, why it spiked in 1990, why some are born with it, others regress, why they have the exact symptoms they do, why more males than females have it. Everything, gluten, casein, sensitivity, every single factor can be explained by mercury. And other things are probably playing a significant role. I don't doubt that at all. But we know that mercury is the primary factor in the epidemic. But there's other things that are obviously playing roles as well. But we've focused specifically on mercury.
So I just want you to mention, or maybe Sharla, you can mention as well, because you talked about amalgams. Before we go into the specific link between mercury and autism, I think we should let people know all of the ways you can get exposure to mercury in our society right now.
So amalgams is one, and then the compact fluorescent light bulbs, which a lot of people are buying these days because they want to be environmentally sound, and so they're converting a lot of the light bulbs in their homes. We highly suggest you use LEDs instead because those don't contain mercury and they're still energy efficient. Coal-fired power plants also release mercury into the environment, and that mercury goes through the food chain with fish and probably also, Eric, weren't you saying recently that they're finding it in our land food as well?
Yeah, I mean, there's been studies as of like even 5 to 10 years ago that show mercury has made its way into every link of the food chain. So when we're saturating the entire planet with mercury because of these coal-fired power plants releasing it into the environment and the rain driving it down, it's literally making its way into every link of the food chain. Fish is the only one that's really tested for mercury, but it's in everything.
And I think we should say, I want to just go back to those compact fluorescent or those new fluorescent light bulbs that everyone is putting in. That is, you know, the one that's been mandated by Congress, people don't understand that there is actually mercury within those bulbs. And if you break one of those light bulbs, it's a hazmat issue. You can't just sweep it up and put it into your trash. You have to, call for help and get it removed as rightly so. It's a hazardous material. And you had, so it says in your documentary, Eric, you had a close encounter with one of those fluorescent light bulbs that broke.
Yeah, those things are incredibly dangerous. And I've talked to the EPA about this several times. I view those light bulbs as them approving a light bulb that if you break it, a bullet comes flying out. That would be safer than this because the bullet could miss you. But this thing has mercury vapors. You can't see or smell them. It goes straight to your brain. And the number of people who are being absolutely devastated health-wise from these light bulbs is probably astronomical. But nobody knows it because they break one, sweep it up, put it in the trash. 3 months later, they develop MS or some other neurological disease and have no clue what caused it. Well, you just breathed in one of the biggest neurotoxins known to man right into your brain, and that's what's causing it. And the big push to go to fluorescent light bulbs from the soft whites and so forth has caused billions, if not trillions, of these to be manufactured each year. And if they don't break in the home or office, they're going to break in the dump, and we're releasing all this mercury into the living environment. So, I mean, this is a catastrophe with these fluorescent light bulbs. And thankfully, everything's starting to go down the direction of LEDs, because they're very energy efficient and last even longer and don't contain mercury, because to really put people in harm's way of one of these bulbs breaking, which is very possible because they break all the time everywhere, and put people at incredible risk of their health just going completely haywire neurologically. I mean, it's unbelievable that we've allowed a product such as this to be out in use.
I know. It is so shocking to when you really delve a little more deeply into these issues, how negligent what, you know, or maybe, you know, who knows what the deals were, the backroom deals that got these to be allowed in, because most of them are actually manufactured in China, right?
So, yes.
They're not, you know, we've forbidden the use of the old light bulbs. And fortunately, like you said, LEDs are coming in, even though they're a little more expensive. But people need to be aware that mercury is found within these new fluorescent energy efficient bulbs, and to be very, very careful. And whenever possible, do not use them. Use the LEDs, and
right.
You know, you'll be much safer. So, So let's go into the other really powerful message of your documentary, Trace Amounts. The reason why this mercury that's in the form of thimerosal is the term that's used in vaccines, why is it there? What's its purpose? And what are the risks and dangers from vaccines that have mercury in them?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest tragedies of this entire issue, is that thimerosal has nothing to do with the efficacy of these vaccines. It's solely used so bacteria doesn't grow as they're manufacturing these vaccines. So they use it during the manufacturing process so they can be lazy and unsterile. They don't have to have these ultra-sterile environments. They can just dump a bunch of thimerosal in there so bacteria doesn't grow. And then they use it for shelf life. And you can put it in a load of 10-dose vial and go put it on a doctor's office shelf, and they can keep inserting a needle into it without worrying about introducing bacteria into it. So it's literally all about saving money and time and being lazy. And so the entire risk is towards the children, and the only reward is for pharmaceutical companies. There's no risk versus reward analysis here because it doesn't have anything to do with the efficacy of the vaccine. So that's a huge thing. We can remove thimerosal, finally, from these vaccines. Everyone's been misled to believe it has been removed. We can finally remove thimerosal without affecting the vaccine supply. And that's step one to restoring faith in the vaccine program. You know, there might be a lot of other issues that people are working on as well, but we've got to start with the one that we can have a win-win, where we can stop this danger without affecting the vaccine supply and open the discussion for anything else that might be harmful in these vaccines. You know, the true fundamental issue here is the oversight and the safety of this vaccine program is fundamentally flawed and corrupt. And the people who have oversight of this vaccine safety are the same ones that are tied to big pharmaceutical companies and have all the liability at stake. So there's a lot of problems with the program as a whole. But using thimerosal in vaccines is not necessary. And it's 50% mercury. So one shot that has mercury in it, thimerosal, will be 25 micrograms of mercury. So it's 50 micrograms of thimerosal. It's half mercury, so it's 25 micrograms of mercury. And to get one of those shots, you'd have to weigh 551 pounds. And that's based on a totally different guideline. It's based on methyl mercury orally ingested, so the equivalent of eating fish. That's what the guideline's based on. This is an injection, so it's 100% absorption of ethyl mercury, which is far more dangerous. It is the form that readily converts into the inorganic form that locks into the brain. This is the form that will build and accumulate in the brain. So, and the CDC has said for years and years and years that this is the safe form of mercury, completely the opposite. In fact, the science has matured over the last 10 years to prove the exact opposite. This is the form that will accumulate in the brain and cause these problems.
So I really want to emphasize a point you made about this. The only reason that vaccine manufacturers have put this highly neurotoxic material, mercury, known as thimerosal, into vaccines, all vaccines, pretty much all vaccines in the moment, is because it has this antibacterial preservative effect. I mean, you know, mercury used to be used to treat people with syphilis. And, you know, there's a whole history of people who've been treated with mercury back in the 1800s and before who've gone totally crazy because of the impact. You know, the Mad Hatters, which mercury was used in making those felt hats that you see, the top hats of the, you know, were very common in the 1800s, right? This is all related to the use of mercury. But, you know, the thing that was so shocking, that serves no purpose other than as a preservative, and there are other ways to preserve the vaccine such as refrigeration. So it's not even necessary. It's just that it's a cheaper way to go for the manufacturers, for the pharmaceutical companies, because they don't have to spend money on refrigeration.
Yeah,
practices.
Yeah, it's the cheapest option. Exactly.
It's the cheapest. So we're putting an unnecessary preservative that is the most powerful neurotoxin in one of the most powerful neurotoxins in the world into the bodies of infants, newborns, premature babies who have no defense, if any of us ever do anyway, but they're the most vulnerable and causing this epidemic. I mean, a show, which I thought was really powerful, the statistics, you know, that 1 in 10,000, you know, through all the decades until thimerosal started to be introduced into vaccines. And now from 1 in 10,000 children being diagnosed, we have 1 in 68, and it's going to increase even, the statistics are looking even worse down the track, you know.
Yeah, and there's a big misconception out there that all over the news media, you'll see reported, and this has been for years now, that mercury was removed in 99, the autism rates keep going up, and therefore there's no link. And they use that as kind of their final nail in the coffin without understanding anything to do with the study. And the CDC completely lets it happen. You know, the latest autism rate of 1 in 68 is based on children who had the highest exposures. These are the children who got the fully backstock loaded thimerosal-containing vaccines, and then started getting flu shots with thimerosal in it in 2004. So everyone's been so fooled to believe mercury's been removed, the rates keep going up, therefore there's no link, without understanding that the latest rate of right now, 1 in 68, is based on those who potentially had the highest exposures yet. So, we're far from the problem being resolved. They did remove it from some of the childhood vaccines, which was great initial step. But once, pretty much the exact time that mercury was removed from some of those vaccines, they started giving flu shots fully loaded with mercury to pregnant women and babies, two the first year of life, one every year after that. And this is catastrophic. Now, instead of giving a 10-pound baby this mercury exposure, and the whole theory behind mercury and autism is it's hitting those that can excrete mercury the least effective, and as the exposure levels go up, it hits more and more and more. Now you're giving it to a developing fetus who has zero ability to excrete it. Now you're hitting them all with the same susceptibility because none of them can excrete the mercury. So 60 million flu shots this season alone contain the full 25 micrograms per dose, and you'd have to weigh 551 pounds as a pregnant woman to be within that federal guideline. And that developing fetus, through science and past historical tragedies, is shown to protect that pregnant mother from the mercury by absorbing that mercury. And the mercury has a very high affinity for that fetus.
And the other irony is that the flu shots, the vaccine, this year's flu shot was totally worthless.
Yeah, I think it had a 18% success rate, or 13%, I can't.
Yeah. So what vaccines does thimerosal still put in?
The primary problem for children and fetuses is the flu shot. I mean, those are given to pregnant women, those are given to babies. Those still, a lot of them still contain the 25 micrograms per dose. Meningitis shots, I think, children 5 years, I want to say around five, get meningitis shots. Meningitis shots contain mercury. Some tetanus shots contain mercury still. There's a whole list of which ones, because there's different manufacturers of all these different vaccines. Some use it, some don't. You know, it's been widely reduced in a lot of the childhood vaccines, such as Hib used to contain 25 micrograms, DTaP used to contain 25 micrograms, and hepatitis B used to contain 12.5 micrograms. For the most part, that mercury's been reduced down to within 1 microgram per shot now. So even the ones they're calling thimerosal-free actually still, by law, could contain up to 1 microgram of mercury, which is still double the guideline for a 10-pound baby.
And just to interject,
all
of those vaccines that Eric just mentioned, we are still delivering them to developing countries with that fully loaded mercury. So the mercury that we've taken out of our vaccines, we still have it in the vaccines that are getting shipped out to developing countries.
You know, you brought that up in the documentary, and that was just horrifying to actually hear that we're just dumping these highly toxic vaccines as people have more awareness and demand them to, you know, that this mercury be removed. Now we're just shipping them overseas to these poor poor countries where their children will be developing autism without any resources to help them at all. That's devastating to a culture.
Yeah, not only
it is, and those countries are highly ostracizing those children that are developing autism because they don't know what's going on. They're almost seen as demonic. They think that they're possessed, and so they don't have the resources and they don't have the education in these communities to even know what's going on. And so they're seeing a lot of abuse too.
Yeah, there's a lot of stigma associated with an autism diagnosis in developing countries.
You know, it's just so horrifying. So I want to move our conversation over to the world of deceit, corruption, and what has driven the flawed science and the government support of these vaccines. And I'd like your thoughts on what's driving these mandates that are happening within states here in the United States, such as California, this sort of a mandate that has just been initiated in Australia, where they are denying the social funding to people who do not vaccinate their children. I think it also was passed in Israel recently. They're denying social support, financial support, which in Australia, parents are giving, or the government gives parents up to $15,000 a year for child, just to support children. If you have, by the way, an autistic child, you get $19,000 from the government in Australia. I wonder what's going to happen with those kids if they're going to have to be vaccinated again, you know, to keep that allowance. So there's a huge blackmail going on. You either get vaccinated or we're going to deprive you of these monies that, you know, are rightly deserved to these families because that's what the government is doing. Well, Shiloh, you have any thoughts or can you maybe explain some of these connections that you uncovered in this documentary?
Are you talking about the mandates or some of
well,
the
Well, I'm just talking
the
about the corruption. I'm talking about the whole situation that has driven Thimerosal to be allowed in vaccines and all of these underlying alliances that have supported this against the good of the public health.
I think up to a certain point, it was gross negligence. They just weren't realize, they didn't realize what they were doing. They weren't adding up the mercury, and they didn't know that they were going beyond their own standards. But when they did add it up, and they had that information, and then they went to Simpson Wood, and they analyzed data, and they were seeing connections, then a cover-up started to happen. And that's when it, and you know, I think in both Eric and my mind, it began to become criminal. I've lost my train of thought. Someone walked in.
I know. You've taken time from your travels in New York.
So at some point it did become criminal, and I think they kept covering it up because they didn't want people to stop vaccinating. They were afraid of lawsuits. Those are the only reasons that I can come up with in my mind, and those are some of the things that you see in transcripts and in emails as to what their fears were. So that's sort of the conclusions that we've come to and what you will come to when you see the film, because you'll see transcripts from Simpson Wood where people are talking about how they are afraid of lawsuits and they've put themselves in a bad position to even analyze this data. Eric, do you have anything to add to that? Eric's been more focused on the mandates and what's going on in California and around the country. He's been traveling, so he has more insight into all of that.
Good.
Yeah,
okay.
Eric,
your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, the mandates, it's just a very 100% clear, this is pharmaceutical company driven. You know, we had one of the most minuscule measles outbreaks ever. And they called it this epidemic when, you know, we've got 1 in 68 children with autism. They've never used the word epidemic. I mean, it's unbelievable what's going on. And they use this tiny little outbreak to go, you know, in this one little state for the most part in California at Disneyland. Now all these states are trying to implement these, you know, take away the exemptions. And they really used it And we knew the second this little measles thing hit the news and was all over the place, we're like, okay, this is leading up to something. We'll see what it is. And I thought it was to really prepare and defend themselves against Bill Thompson speaking, because Bill Thompson is going to come out, discuss everything and disclose everything. I thought that's what it was all about. But then all these proposed bills came out, and it's like, okay, this is what it was for. And it's clear these are pharmaceutical lobbyists pushing this. In fact, the one in California we've been fighting extensively. You know, Pan, Senator Pan, who's the author of the bill and the lead of the whole thing, he's consulted by these pharmaceutical lobbyists the entire time. I mean, it is completely corrupt, and what we've witnessed from these legislators is almost incomprehensible. I mean, I can't even comprehend that this is going on. And it's money-driven, it's completely corrupt, completely broken, and it's completely fraudulent what they're doing. You know, there was a vote up in the Education Committee in California here, and the first three votes were no's, and the bill was going to be killed. And then the chairman let Pan delay the vote a week, and what they did is during that week they did all these backdoor deals, pulled one of the guys who said no, he's off the committee now. They pulled in a guy from a previous committee that they knew was a yes. They brought in another guy that was a yes, and they ended up passing the bill. I mean, it is sick and twisted what's going on, and it's money-driven, it's pharmaceutical lobbyist-driven, and there is nothing about public health that is driving this. It's the exact opposite. It's all financial driven. And we've got to stand up against it. This is the fundamental of America is our freedom, right? And now they're going to force us to take a drug that's got mercury and that's got potentially other devastating chemicals. I mean, there's a reason why there's a vaccine injury compensation program. That is because they know there's a susceptible population, and they never talk about this, that these children get brain damaged and die. And that vaccine injury compensation fund funds that, and that takes care of it. So the liability is not in the pharmaceutical company's hands. And to even take that first step to acknowledge that there is harm, and that's why we fund the harm, we cannot force parents who pay taxes for these public schools to get their children to play Russian roulette in order to go to these schools. If there's any chance of or risk of harm, you cannot force every child like it's a one-size-fits-all. This is absolutely, at its core against our freedom, especially our freedom to not inject ourselves with chemicals. I mean, there's just so much wrong with this, and that's why I've been traveling with Bobby Kennedy state by state trying to fight these bills. I mean, these are pretty much unconstitutional. They're money-driven and pharmaceutical company-driven. And the public needs to stand up to this and call out what's going on, because it's so beyond obvious of what this hysteria over these measles outbreaks, where no one was seriously harmed in any way. No one died. They got measles, they got over it, and they're completely fine now. And they turned it into this proposing all these mandates.
So I'm just wondering, do you think that outbreak of measles in Disneyland was an opportunist event that occurred, or was it a created, planted event?
Yeah, I don't know. I would never put anything past anybody at this point. I would like
you
to
know.
I would like to assume that it was just a natural event, and some of the kids who were vaccinated got measles. I mean, there's a lot of there's a discussion that the vaccines aren't working appropriately. Same with the pertussis vaccine and why they're getting pertussis. That the acellular form of pertussis, the acellular pertussis vaccine, is not working. So, and a lot of people like to say these vaccines that children are getting can shed the live virus and expose other people to it. So there's a lot of controversy, a lot of different sides to it. But what they did is they took this, let's just say it was a natural occurrence, this tiny natural occurrence. And I'm curious to see at the end of the year how many measles cases there were compared to previous years, because it almost seems like there's going to be less this year. So they've taken this tiny little thing and blew it out of proportion in order to get the rest, you know, the public on board with taking away some of these exemptions. It's like I just see it as a brainwashing tactic, and the herd just follows along with it and actually believes that there's severe danger here, when the real danger is in the corrupt system and the people overseeing the safety of the system. Keep in mind, this system was designed for human health and to protect and save lives. It's completely evolved into a money machine and has nothing to do with saving lives anymore. And we've lost focus on what vaccines are for fundamentally. So it's the system's got to be turned upside down. And what we're trying to do with the film is expose what happened, because what happened in history in regards to just thimerosal, nothing else, just thimerosal is our only focus. What's happened with just this one little thing is probably one of the biggest crimes against humanity of all time. I can't imagine something being bigger.
Especially to the most vulnerable
part
of our population, the most innocent and vulnerable. So do you, Charlotte, are you going to say something? No.
Oh, I think that was Eric.
Oh, okay. Eric, did you want to add something?
No. No, that was
okay.
It.
So do you think this mandate will pass in California?
I don't know. You know, it's already gone through the Health Committee, Education Committee, Judiciary. I think it goes to Appropriations next, and then it goes through a series of committees within the Assembly. There's quite a few more steps. I know there's people working diligently on trying to stop this. You know, the financial impacts within the state are huge. A lot of people, I know, you know, the biggest issue here is you're forcing people who have legitimate concerns to vaccinate their children instead of fixing the problem that's causing these concerns with the parents. Because guess what? Every year it's getting worse and worse, and it's going to continue to get worse and worse because people have access to these published studies, and they're calling the bluff of the CDC, who is saying the science has been performed. It is in no way but even close to have been performed, and in fact, it has been performed on the other side, and it's very conclusive that there is a link, and it is causing autism and neurodevelopmental disorders. So we've got to stop these bills. There's a lot of organizations that are the good side of this and the light side of this, if there is one, is that it has brought a lot more public awareness that there's something going on here and a lot of corruption going on, not only within pharmaceutical and CDC, but also within legislators and how tied they are with these pharmaceutical lobbyists. So a lot of these big-time organizations and people with money and strength and power are now getting more involved. And I think, you know, it's all going to come to a head here. It's got to be put back into the public discussion, the national debate, hit head-on and get resolved somehow, because it's just going to get worse and worse every year. And we're going to keep getting these totalitarian bills that are coming through, and we're no longer going to be a free society. It's going to be more communist-run, in my mind, than a free, you know, the fundamentals of America are. I mean, this is a country of freedom. We're taking away our freedoms at this point, one step at a time, and we've got to all stand up together and fight these with these corrupt senators. Senator Pan is one of the most corrupt senators I've probably ever known. He's only been in his position 4 months, and he's trying to propose one of the most un-American bills you can imagine. And people need to see his ties to pharmaceutical lobbyists. And I've had a face-to-face discussion with him. Me and Bobby Kennedy both met with him, and it was like talking to somebody who isn't on the same level of consciousness as us. It's like talking to somebody that doesn't understand anything. He didn't understand anything. I felt like I was talking to a brick wall.
Yeah.
Because there's no getting through to a guy that's getting funding and has other alternate,
agenda.
Plans or agenda.
You know, Gary Null, who did a very in-depth debate on a radio station in Santa Cruz, and I don't know if you listened to that. I think it was 3 hours. But one of the points he brought up was that Senator Pan has gotten campaign contributions from the pharmaceutical industry, which is then it's illegal for him to be involved in this issue when he has been funded by the pharmaceutical companies. I mean, I just wonder if this ever proceeds any further, at what point are people going to consider his actions criminal actions and take action? I'm just a pop psychic.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I have, through your documentary and other things that I've been, you know, researching and conversations I've had, you can see that this situation is just rotten to the core. There are so many agendas, and our children's health does not come into the picture. It's only dollars and cents. It's only
dollars and cents. Pan introducing this bill has zero to do with public health. It has everything to do with money. And and I almost feel like doing another documentary just on this, because the level of corruption I've seen is horrendous. I would love to expose it all. I mean, everything up to the Senate President De Leon, who's being investigated for other fraudulent activities right now. But you know, to see the maneuvering they did and the backdoor deals they did when this bill was going to be killed in the Education Committee, I was blown away by it. And I feel like all this needs to be exposed because this is not how the system should work. And
well, Eric, I'm sure it will be exposed. I am sure that all that's going on will shed the light onto that political maneuvering side. And I think it's important to emphasize that the focus of the documentary isn't against vaccines. That's another topic for other people. You are just really educating people that the preservative in many of these vaccines is mercury, which should never have been there, has no place as a preservative ever. There are options, and that this is really the message that you and Bobby Kennedy Jr., Robert F. Kennedy Jr., this is the message that you are not, you know, people can have their own decision about vaccinations, but the fact that there is a toxic ingredient that doesn't need to be there, that is the cause of this harm and this epidemic of autism, is such a powerful message that you are bringing out in your documentary.
Yeah, yep. And our message is, like you said, has nothing to do with anti-vaccine or being pro-vaccine. It has everything to do about getting to the bottom of a potential theory that could be causing severe harm. And that's kind of the root of this. It's not about trying to promote an anti-vaccine agenda or be pro-vaccine agenda. It's about presenting what happened in history and trying to get to the bottom of a very legitimate theory of what might be playing a role in these neurodevelopmental disorders. And we wanted to get this information to the public. And as we have been doing that, people who are completely against us and think we're anti-vaccine watch the film, and they're completely turned to the other side, our side. And every single person, there hasn't been one that hasn't thought there was a problem after watching this film. Because after you watch this film, you realize it's not me or Shiloh you're going to object to or disagree with. If you still disagree with this film after you watch it, you're disagreeing with the CDC because it's their documents, it's their emails, and it's their scientists talking. So, and they realize that. They realize there's so much more to the story here. They've been completely misled by the news agencies who are completely bought off and sold with their commercial funding for their pharmaceutical drugs. And they see a totally different side of the story, and some of the biggest journalists out there who have slammed people like me for years are now coming to our side. Same with doctors, same with scientists, same with big political figures. They're watching this and understanding now that they've been completely misled, and a lot are very angry about it and embarrassed because they've been reporting on this and, you know, spoon-fed the information from the CDC and then writing their reports. And now they see what's really going on, and they're completely embarrassed and they're furious, as they should be.
Well, congratulations, Eric. You're accomplishing your mission in bringing the truth out so people can see what's really going on. Well, you know, it's happening. You are doing it. So in the last few minutes that we have, Shiloh, what would you encourage people to do to help learn about this whole topic, this whole situation? And what are some action steps you're encouraging people to take?
Well, I mean, some simple things that people can do on an everyday basis, they can make choices with their money. Like when they go to get a filling, they can choose a biocompatible filling as opposed to an amalgam. When they go to buy that energy efficient light bulb, they choose an LED. We have a petition on our website that calls for the 100% removal of thimerosal from all vaccines, and they can go to traceamounts.com and sign that petition, and then they can share it on their Facebook page. We have a lot of information on our Facebook page. I suggest that people like us on Facebook. I also suggest that people peruse our Trace Amounts website, traceamounts.com, because we have videos on there that people can share on Facebook. Ethyl versus methyl comparison of mercury is on there, and they can share that on their Facebook, and lots of other great videos. The Mad Hatter's video, you were just talking about Mad Hatter's earlier, and we have a video about that on our Facebook. So we're really about education. We want We want everybody to see trace amounts because we think the information in it is so important. And like Eric said, this isn't our information. We were like investigative reporters stringing all of this together in a story form. So there's science in there. There's documents from the CDC. There's information that people need to know about. This is informed consent. Our government isn't providing informed consent. So people like Eric and I are, we're seeing documentaries popping up all over the place because people feel compelled to bring that informed consent to our communities. So, yeah, I would just say traceamounts.com, best resource. And we also have people putting on films throughout the country, and anybody can go to our website. And if they want to get their community into a film, they can go to our website and put in a location and a time and get that going as well.
And I encourage everyone to purchase a copy of Trace Amounts for your own purpose, to share with your family, with friends, have little home showings, whatever you can do to help get this message out, and also to support you and Eric, who have made a huge commitment to make this possible. So I think we all need to take this lesson and really share it as far and wide as we can. I know I was telling you before we had our conversation today that I will be journeying to Australia on a lecture tour, and I really intend to show this wherever I go. So it's all about each one of us being proactive. We can all make a difference in bringing this knowledge and this truth to light. Eric, the last thing I want to ask you in the time we have remaining, because you went through a mercury event, you were poisoned with mercury. What did you learn for your own healing journey that you can share with us? For those of us who have had mercury exposures, what would you say was the most effective way to help detoxify the mercury out of your system? Can you share with us some insights that you learned along the way?
Yeah, I mean, I think any way you can naturally boost your glutathione levels is key. But, you know, my primary treatment, and I think what is the best way to get mercury out of the body and brain specifically is Dr. Andy Cutler's protocol. And he's got a book out there that really kind of walks through what that protocol is. And it's basically using DMPS or DMSA, which are chelating drugs, to bind to mercury and kind of clear your body with it in conjunction with alpha-lipoic acid, which is just a strong antioxidant that's double thiol water soluble, so it'll bind to mercury and cross the blood-brain barrier, and that really pulls it out of the brain. So, I mean, you know, my magic bullet, if you want to call it, when I got sick from the tetanus shot was Andy Cutler's protocol. He's a PhD in chemistry from Princeton. I mean, this guy knows his stuff. You know, these PhDs really understand mercury. MDs don't know mercury at all. They have no clue what mercury can do to you. They are maybe trained in an hour of acute mercury poisoning, which is totally different than chronic, which is what this is. And really, MDs have no idea what mercury can do to you or how to even diagnose it or anything. But PhDs really get it. I mean, this is mercury. This is an element on a periodic table. This is scientist's business right here. And so I went through his protocol, and that's what ultimately did it. And I would recommend anybody, even if you don't have symptoms, going through some type of light mercury chelation, because you've got it in your body and brain no matter what. I mean, this stuff goes in your brain and has, you know, stay in your brain for 50 years. Even if you're 50 years old, you still have mercury in your brain you got when you were a baby in your DTP vaccine. I mean, it's everybody can benefit from getting the mercury out of them.
And as we made
I just
want to
go ahead. I'm so sorry.
No, go ahead.
I just want to mention, because Eric brings up detoxing mercury, and it is something that probably most people would benefit from, but one thing that's really important is that people remove their amalgams before they do any sort of mercury detox. Otherwise, you're just sort of recirculating that mercury through the body. So amalgam removal would be the first step.
And I really acknowledge that, because I had to have all my mercury amalgams removed, and I'm sure that helped to ensure good health, because I certainly didn't have it when I was younger. So, and they are fading out, and I know even in Scandinavian countries, European countries, they no longer use mercury amalgams. It's, you know, it's slowly happening here because the American Dental Association never acknowledged mercury was a toxic substance in amalgam.
Yeah.
So crazy world.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you said earlier, we have such massive exposure to mercury all over, from coal burning plants from China that, you know, ride the jet stream and drop it down here, to mercury exposures to from amalgams, from in, you know, vaccines. Just everyone needs to be aware. And before you can detoxify every other heavy metals, you have to first mobilize the mercury out. So it's a critical thing to address for your health and recovering from chronic neurological issues as well. Well, we've come to the end of our show, so I just want to thank you, Eric Gladden, Shiloh Levine. I am just so grateful. I just want you to know, for me personally and for all the people whose lives you're touching, we so appreciate all the efforts, everything it took to make this happen, and your ongoing campaign to enlighten us and help us to understand and become more empowered with the truth. So I just really want to thank you both, and I want to encourage everyone, please get a copy of Trace Amounts. Watch this documentary. It will change your life forever. And I just wish you both the best success, and again, thank you for the wonderful work you're doing.
Thank you.
And thank you. Thank you for bringing awareness to this. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And to all my listeners, thank you for joining me. And I know that this information will support you in getting empowered, making the best choices, and taking a stand for what you need to do. So until next time, remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.